Many technology companies are turning their attention to the online virtual world known as the metaverse. Just yesterday, Microsoft spent close to $70 billion to acquire the game developer Activision Blizzard, which it says will provide them with building blocks for the metaverse. Walmart and Nike are among companies who have filed trademarks for their products in the virtual world. But the concept of the metaverse is still loosely defined and foreign to most of us still here in the physical world. Our next guest teaches a class entirely in virtual reality, and he's here to help us understand the hype. Jeremy Bailenson is the Thomas More Stork Professor in the Department of Communication and founding director of the Virtual Human Interaction Lab at Stanford University. Jeremy, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
So people are hearing the word metaverse. Can you give them the elevator pitch on what exactly that means?
The metaverse is people, places, and things. People are avatars, representations of us as we see each other in a virtual world. Places are a persistent, meaning it's always there and it's always the same location where you can meet. And then things are objects, virtual versions of, could be shoes, could be houses, could be anything you could imagine. So loosely speaking, we think of the metaverse as virtual people, places, and things.
And the phrase metaverse comes from the Neal Stephenson novel, Snow Crash, I believe. I read it a long time ago. It was this flashy, super lit, super crowded place where I might have a samurai sword fight with somebody. What's the reality of our virtual reality online world right now?
Yeah, so the metaverse comes from science fiction, the term itself, and a lot of virtual reality, both on the technology side and on the research. We look to science fiction because these are the people who've been thinking about this for quite some time. But when you look to the world now, there's really three instantiations of the metaverse. Number one is you're wearing a VR headset and you are seeing other people's avatars and you're fully immersed. And when you think of those metaverse, there's places like VR Chat and Engage and Rec Room, and there's a couple thousand people per day on any one of those platforms at any given time. The second version are these 2D spaces similar to what we used to have in something called Second Life, where you use your mouse and your keyboard and you walk around VR. And a lot of these 2D spaces now, for example, Decentraland, they're being driven by NFTs, these crypto-based 3D objects, non-fungible tokens. A lot of the energy that you're seeing from these marketing companies, when you mentioned in the intro, for example, Nike, they're thinking about these 2D spaces. And then if you're expanding to 2D spaces, you have to think about places like Roblox that has 200 million monthly users, where you've got kids that are kind of playing around in their own metaverse. The third and final instantiation, which is very different from the first two, are those that do augmented reality. They want to map the planet. And so people that create these games, for example, Pokemon Go, you've got to create a version of the metaverse that maps geographically onto the physical world. So three different versions of the metaverse, all of them using that term, but very different in terms of their applications and the technology behind them.
With the virtual reality side of things, I've seen you quoted elsewhere talking about a lot of their potential right now being the world of work and of training. Can you talk about some of the potential that's becoming real now, not just potential?
So we like to joke, the original use case of virtual reality is from 1929. And it was the flight simulator. And despite all the flashy things that you can think about VR to be used for, the one application that continues to endure and to be the true killer application is training. So I've co-founded a company called Striver. We began by training quarterbacks here at Stanford, then in the National Football League. Eventually, we moved to enterprise training companies. So we've trained over 800,000 Walmart employees who put on the goggles and then were instantly transported into Holiday Rush the day after Thanksgiving to learn how to handle the cacophony of all of those customers, or how to find a safety violation by looking around. We're now installing VR to 4,300 Bank of America across the country, where people will be able to train on how to talk to customers in a way that's better. And, you know, people talk about the metaverse, but what they often forget is you have to have a reason for somebody to go to VR. And why we like corporate training as the foundation for the metaverse is we know that it's a proven application, and everyday employees are spending time putting the goggles on. And we believe that as the metaverse gains traction, what's actually going to drive it is not going to be these fun marketing employees, but it's really going to be, you know, figuring out how to do your job better with training.
You've taught a class completely in virtual reality where everybody's wearing the goggles. You teach classes without it. What have you learned about when this is a useful tool and when it is not?
So that's, thank you for that question. It's exactly the right one to be asking. And so we taught a class, two classes in VR here at Stanford. We had 263 Stanford students over 6 months. They spent over 200,000 shared minutes together. This is minutes where they were in a room together, seeing each other's avatars in their own dorm rooms, wearing the headsets, but feeling like they're together. And some things work really well in VR. For example, if you're building something, you're designing a space, or if you want to have proper nonverbal communication. So on Zoom, if you are looking at a person on your screen, other people don't know where you're looking. But in VR, if you turn your head to look at a person, a third person in that room can see where you're looking. And if you point your finger at a fourth person, everyone can see the spatial coherence. They know where you're pointing. So where it was an epic win in our class using VR was, first of all, doing amazing things in VR, for example, building spaces. But second is really feeling this community of being together. We call it social presence.
We've talked about work training. We've talked about education. I'm a big nerd, Jeremy. How about entertainment? What is on the horizon there?
Well, the thing about entertainment is that it's not broken. So I always think about VR for, let's solve really hard problems. Like, how do you train someone on how to, be in a very difficult situation? For example, if, training firefighters that's a great use case because it's hard to do that. I don't like using VR gratuitously. And what works really well right now for your email is your phone or your computer. And what works really well for watching a movie is a screen. And so I'm not seeing the home run use cases that are purely entertainment based. And that's simply because entertainment is so good on 2D screens. It's unclear yet how 3D and having your body tracked in VR really adds to that.
Interesting. Jeremy, thanks so much for joining us today.
I really appreciate you having me, and have a fantastic day there on Central.
You too. That's Jeremy Bailenson, the Thomas More Stork Professor in the Department of Communication at Stanford University, with us today to talk about virtual reality in the online world of the metaverse.